Okay, so yesterday we introduced the Tanai of the Avnei Nezer regarding the concept of Afikomen and addressing the sometimes conflicting issues that we want to have the Afikomen by Chatzos, but we're also not supposed to be eating after the Afikomen. So that could create a certain tension, and especially if we want to have a meaningful and a satisfying Seder, both in terms of the goal of the Seder being the educational experience that it's meant to be and the intense recognition of what Yetzias Mitzrayim was, which is its whole purpose, so we wouldn't want it to be compromised. And also the fact that it's Yontif, and we have Simchas Yontif, and therefore it's eat in a very constrained way on top of the issues of Shiurim and the issues of obligatory eatings and the like that are already a part of the Seder, but then to do so in a way where you're really under such a tight time frame. So as the Banim have pointed out, it does create a little bit of a tension regarding Simchas Yontif also. So that's what causes this crunch that we have here. And we saw that the Avnei Nezer suggestion, you had a chance to see the Avnei Nezer inside, so you saw the way he phrases it and the way he gets to it, that we should build on what we've been talking about, Kavanah and Mitzvos and Tanai and Mitzvos, and make a condition that if Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is right, then Chatzos is the point. So then, okay, I'll have it by Chatzos, that will be my Afikomen, but after that the clock resets, so I can eat more. And then I can have another Afikomen later, and if that's the way it's supposed to be, like Rabbi Akiva, so then that will be the Afikomen. So to explore that a little bit more, first of all, let's take a step back and try to understand what the Afikomen is. The phrasing already is a little, which we call this last piece of matzah the Afikomen. It's a little bit jarring because the language, the Gemara, language, the Mishnah, we're so familiar with it, we quote in the Haggadah, is that you should not have an Afikomen, meaning that the Afikomen somehow represents the dessert. So you should not have a dessert after, whether it's the matzah, whether it's the Korban Pesach, whether one's representing the other. It's what you should not have, but by that usage, so the matzah has taken on the title of Afikomen. So we say you shouldn't have essentially an Afikomen after the Afikomen. You shouldn't have a dessert after what has taken on this name, the Afikomen. So that matzah that we're having at the end, so what is it? And here, hope you'll appreciate about the sugi, you'll see that a part of the dessert nature of this particular sugi, you see it brings together a lot of different elements of what we've talked about in the past few weeks. So what exactly, and maybe for that beholds mind, you see it has a lot of components to it, what exactly is the status of that last kedayis of matzah? Is that a mitzvah itself? Is that maybe the mitzvah? Is that some kind of a token of a zecher? So here we have what seems to be different views in Rishonim. You saw the Rashi and the Rashbam and Kufites and the Beis over there where that Mishnah appears, Emaftir, Achra, Pesach, Avikomen, that they seem to understand that what is that kazayis of matzah that we have as the Afikomen? That is the mitzvah, right? That is the mitzvah of matzah that we have as the chiyuv of eating matzah. That's where the magic happens. That is it. While, according to Tosfos, it's not necessarily the case that the mitzvah of matzah is really fulfilled with the first kazayis that you have at the very beginning of the meal. And if that's the case, so then where exactly does this matzah fit in? So presumably as a kind of a zecher, as something that's supposed to represent either the Korban Pesach or the matzah that was eaten together with the Korban Pesach. So that already is important to try to consider and appreciate. We're talking about mitzvah, srichos, kavana, and what kavana is going to impact here. So a part of the question is this a mitzvah at all? And also, how is that mitzvah defined? Now, it's also striking to note that there seems to be a little bit of a inconsistency in the Rashbam, and this goes back here for some nice comprehensive synergy. This really goes back to day one of this parak, day one of this man, because if really the mitzvah of matzah is this last bite that you have at the end, and not the first bite, in a sense, this challenges our first sugya, right? It challenges specifically the Rashbam. How so? Do you see how there's a, somewhat of a tension there, all right? Yeah, right? So doesn't that seem to be a basic tension that on day one we had all this focus that we have to be appetitious for that first matzah because that's the mitzvah, it's a hiddur mitzvah, etc., etc. And then it turns out we have to preserve our appetite in order to do this. And then here we are, here's the Rashbam saying, when's the mitzvah? The mitzvah is really hours later after you've had quite a lot to eat, probably. So how exactly do you understand that? And this also ties into a more recent sugya with the Karpas and the Mara, and the whole question that is what's prompting Tostus's position about the question, maybe the mitzvah is actually at the beginning. And it's a question of how do you have the bracha at the beginning and then say that the mitzvah is actually at the end, very far separated from the bracha, which essentially is also the question that the Gemara had brought up relating to Karpas and Mar, and where the bracha should be there. And the Gemara has that phrase, could it be that you'll eat the Karpas and you'll be Moli Kreso, that, however you understand that language, and then you're going to make the bracha on the Mar? So we have the bracha on the matzah at the very beginning. What does that say about where the mitzvah is? So it seems this is something that Rav Asher Weiss discusses in his Sefer HaMsachim, and this also, once again, synergizes with a lot of our recent discussions. That presumably it's true that there's really aspects of mitzvah in both, and that when you eat the matzah at the beginning, so yes, that clearly is the mitzvah of matzah. But it doesn't contradict the fact that the Iker mitzvah could still be happening at the end. And that they all become components of one big mitzvah. And this also connects to what we spoke about yesterday. You know, the question of, can you be in fulfillment of a mitzvah? So much so that if it were to stop there, you would be yotze on a basic level. And yet still have more to complete for it to be the full realization of that. So in other words, if you only had that first kezias of matzah, you would be yotze the mitzvah of matzah. But yet, it may still not contradict that to say that the full kiyum of what matzah is supposed to be might come from eating that last kezias all that time later. And that connects to this question of mitzvahs being an ongoing process and even having the ability to finish it off more, even past the point where you could have been yotzei. And I just noticed that he actually discusses something which should trouble me in the past. There's a chumrah that, it's a chumrah or however you want to look at it, it's a hanhaga that, seen the name of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and I wondered about it along these lines. And I saw that Rav Asher Weiss in a Sefer HaMsachim, he mentions the same issue. He doesn't quote Rav Shlomo Zalman, but he mentions the same issue and indeed takes the other side of it. That, for example, when it comes to reading the Megillah, right, so we have a din that you're supposed to hear or read the whole Megillah mitoch haktav, right, from the text itself. So when you go to shul on Purim, so you hear the Baal Koreh read the Megillah from a kosher Megillah, and you're following along probably with not a kosher Megillah, with a printed Megillah. Now it happens to be that B'diavad, you are Yotzei the Megillah if you only hear 51% of it from a kosher Megillah. So if you miss some words, so you're able to make them up by reading inside your printed Megillah. Because you'll be Yotzei B'dieved with a minority of the Megillah read through a printed text. So based on that, there was a point that we attribute to Shlomo Zalman and others, that maybe the hanhaga that we have, that certain psukim are read out loud by the tzibur, is somewhat problematic, because that's going to create a b'dieved situation on those psukim, even though you will also hear it read from the Baal Koreh, and especially the last pasuk. The last pasuk, where we have a hanhaga to read that out loud also, La'yudim ha'isa'ora. So there, in particular, Shlomo Zalman made this point, that then you'll finish the Megillah. The last pasuk you'll read yourself, not from the kosher Megillah. So once you finish the Megillah, you'll be Yotzei. You'll be Yotzei to the Eved. And then, yes, after that, he's going to, the Baal Koreh is going to read it from the kosher Megillah. But maybe that's bad. Maybe now you're already Yotzei, so you can't correct the Evedness of what you've done by hearing that last pasuk again, now from the kosher Megillah. So I've always wondered about that, and I see that Rav Asher has the same kind of approach here. It doesn't sound like, first of all, that that's a kapeda that we have. And presumably it's because what we mean when we say b'dieved, that kind of b'dieved, we mean that it's all one big action, and if you were to stop short, it would also be acceptable. But still, when you get further, you're going to pass that point along the way. It's not shy to say that, okay, yotze b'dieved and you can't fix it. When it's all one big flow, so then we mean when we say b'dieved, you're okay if you don't get to the end. So it doesn't mean that the show is over as soon as you go to the other. It means that, okay, so it's all one big process, and you don't absolutely have to get to the end, but once you get to the end, so then that is the full kiyum. So presumably here also, when you have a mitzvah like that, or a format, a structure of a mitzvah like that, it makes sense to say that it's all one big action, and you're not coming back and correcting a v'dieved mitzvah, you are just finishing it. So he happens to mention the story I told you yesterday about the Esrog and Rav Chaim and the Beis Halevi, and the question of whether it makes sense to say that you should davka take the kosher Esrog first, or you should not take the kosher Esrog first, because that will mean it's all over and there's no value to taking the Mahudra Esrog afterwards. So how does that relate to this? First of all, one might disagree with that whole mahalach. But even if you don't, it's easier to say that that's two different things. That here we're talking about, you're taking two discrete esrogim. So once you take an esrog, that's the whole action, and then it's fair to say maybe that there's no value to coming back and doing it later. But when we're talking about something that's just an ongoing quantity, so then it seems reasonable to say that it's all part of one unit. And the first part is a mitzvah, and yes, if you only did that part, maybe you would have been Yotzei, but that the ideal mitzvah won't be reached until you go further, until you go to the end. And this also seems to be compatible with the way the Rambam presents it. Because the Rambam, in addressing why it is, and it's something that we'll say more about in a minute, why it is that we shouldn't be eating after the Afikomen, is because we want to end off with a mitzvah. So apparently saying that that last kezias is a mitzvah. But he also says, if you recall, so it's really a little bit of a share quality with so many different aspects that we spoke about that reunite in this discussion, but, or in Yotzei Chazara today, same case. So the question of Haseba. So when the Rambam talks about Haseba, so he requires Haseba by the first Kezias of Matzah, and not by this last Kezias of Matzah. So it certainly sounds like the Rambam is identifying the key mitzvah of Matzah as that opening Kezias. But at the same time, he says, don't eat after the Afikoman because that is supposed to leave you with a mitzvah. So it seems like it's a similar structure, that they're all a mitzvah. It's not going to become no longer a mitzvah just because you were yotzei with the first one, and it works in both directions. That whether you say the ikra mitzvah is the last kezias, the first kezias is still a mitzvah, and it makes sense to have the bracha attached to that. And vice versa, that you could say that the first kezias is the mitzvah, and that's why you want to have heseva there. But still, the last kezias is also a mitzvah. It's not stam a snack, and it's not just a zecher either. It's still a part of the mitzvah of matzah. Okay, so far so good? Everybody with me? So this also relates to this bigger question of why is it that we don't want to eat after the afikomen? Why does the Mishnah say ein mafkirin achar ha-pesach afikomen? So here there's one marmakum that I regret not putting out. I don't think I put this on, so I apologize. You can take a look at it tomorrow. Could I see you inside? The Balamor. In general, the Balamor in the end of Pesachim is often quoted because he has a number of interesting questions and points that he adds there at the end of Pesachim. It has to do with the bracha on matzah and Sfiras Omer and Sfigat Yomo by Sfiras Omer. So it's worth seeing in general the last sections of the Balamor and Pesachim. But right before those points about Sfira and matzah during the rest of Pesach, so he discusses this issue of why is it that you shouldn't eat after, the Mishnah is telling us not to eat after the Afikomen. And he quotes there two reasons, which is probably very relevant to nailing down exactly what are our parameters here. So he quotes, in the name of another, the idea that maybe it's because you want to make sure that you will eat the Karban Pesach and you'll eat the matzah al hasova. That both the Karban Pesach itself and the matzah are supposed to represent Bisman Hazeh, the Karban Pesach. So we want that you should get all your hunger out of the way first. So essentially, we're kind of bounding it in, according to this explanation, and we're saying that if you know that you can't eat after this, so you'll make sure that whatever you want to eat to satisfy yourself, you'll have first. So you'll have your meal first, recognizing that you're not going to be able to come back to it later. And then when you get to the Karban Pesach, so that's going to be al hasova. Now, just parenthetically, while we're bringing together some different topics here, so the idea of al hasova is connected to the idea that we have a prohibition to break the bones of the Karban Pesach, and that prohibition is there, as the Sefer HaChinuch famously explains, to make sure that we eat it like a melech, that we eat it not in a hurried fashion, not in a very ravenous fashion. So therefore, we want to make sure that we are somewhat satisfied. You know, we have to have that sweet spot between sova and achila gasa. We don't want to be so full that the eating doesn't count. That's again another day one point. But we also don't want to be so ravenous that for the Karban Pesach that we'll come to break a bone while we're eating. You know, it's a little bit of a circular aspect to the Tamei Mitzvos here. It's very fascinating. I said famously a second ago because this is where there is one of the most quoted lines in the Sefer HaChinuch. It goes to the whole concept of mitzvos maisios. Again, part of the whole idea that our relationship to mitzvos is very much under the spotlight Pesach night, the whole concept of how we connect to them. So the Sefer HaChinuch has a line that's very often quoted, maybe you've heard it even quoted just out of this context, that we have mitzvos maisios, that we have practical mitzvos, because acharei ha-pu'ulos nimshach ma'lavavos, that we want to connect emotionally and intellectually with the values of the mitzvos, but that happens through actions. So we do things that have an impact on how we think and how we feel. And he says that, he says it more than one place, but the place it's quoted from is in the context of this mitzvah. Of Etzem Losish Berubo, you're not supposed to break the bones of the Karban Pesach, because we want to have the mindset of melucha, of a regal character, and the king is not going to eat in a ravenous way. He's going to have a sense of luxury. So therefore, we have to eat in a way that doesn't risk breaking the bones because we're so ravenous, we're so starving. So in that context, what the Sefer Echinuch says, that the way we do things influences how we think. So we want to have that mentality. So here is where I say it's a little bit circular. So you eat al hasova, so that you shouldn't come to break the bones. But the idea of breaking the bones, the way of making sure that you eat al hasova, kind of synergy, if you will, I guess the points kind of support each other, that you should be careful not to break the bones of the Korban Pesach so that you will eat in a sense of luxury, and therefore you should eat in a sense of luxury so that you won't break the bones. They seem to kind of support each other. But that's the reason that the Baal HaMor first quotes that you shouldn't come to eat everything, you shouldn't eat anything after the Korban Pesach, because if you know that you can't eat after, you'll eat before, and therefore you will be eating almost though. Okay, so far so good? That's the first reason. So the Baal HaMor himself, he says that that is not actually a compelling reason to him. And it's interesting, maybe you can think of the raya from the Gemara that you saw yesterday, if you test in the Beis. There is a raya that doesn't seem so compelling. Think of that for a second. Right, because the conclusion that you would draw from that, and it's part of what affects this whole issue here, is that, okay, so once you eat the Korban Pesach, so then the goal has been accomplished. But it doesn't sound like that from the Gemara, because the Gemara focuses on what difference between the Korban Pesach and the matzah. You know what he's getting at? Yeah, Ari?
The weaker flavor, that's part of the matzah.
Exactly, the weaker flavor. He says, okay, the Gemara has the statement. Now you might say it's one thing if we had this kveda by matzah, because matzah doesn't stick so long. The matzah doesn't have that strong flavor. But the Korban Pesach, it's going to be hard to overcome that flavor. So it sounds like from the Gemara that there's a value that there should be a persistent taste. That's what we're talking about. So says the Baal HaMor, if that's what we're looking at, so then why do we care? Why it doesn't seem to be a factor as far as Al-Sova? So therefore, he understands it as different. He says that this is to make sure that we don't forget to say Hallel, because Hallel has yet to come. And also the way it was when the Korban Pesach was brought, so everyone was very crowded on the ground, and then they had to move to say Hallel on the roof. And if you have too much of a distraction in between, you could forget to say Hallel. So if you say, okay, let's all go to the den to have some dessert, so then that's going to create a interruption, and you're going to forget about Hallel. So therefore, the idea that the taste should persist, that is in order to make sure that you don't forget to go say Hallel. And he then connects that, once again, it's a Shir Kleli thing, he connects that to the issue of Mosif HaKosos. We saw that the question of having extra Kosos was specifically between, or most intensely, most acutely, between Kos 3 and Kos 4. So he says that's also, it's the same idea, we're trying to protect the Hallel. We don't want you to get drunk, and we don't want you to forget. So all of these dinim are there in order to make sure that Hallel is protected. So what comes out then is that that might affect just how much of an issue or how far the issue goes of a maftir nachal pesach, right? Because that is going to be the central issue, or one of the central issues, a number of central, one of the main issues in the Avnei Nezer's proposal, right? Because the Avnei Nezer is trying to figure out how can we reconcile having the afikomen before chatzos and still allowing space for you to continue the meal after chatzos. So he wants to define where exactly does it begin and end. This issue of not eating after the afikomen, how far does it go? So he's working off the assumption, the Avnei Nezer, that it should only be between when you finish your afikomen and the end of the mitzvah, which, according to Lozo Nazari's understanding, is chatzos. So therefore, his whole premise is that the isser of eating after the afikomen is only going to be up until chatzos, and after chatzos, it could restart. So that's a disputed point. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, for example, has a tshuva about this, where he takes great issue with this. He says he doesn't think that this has been, clearly hasn't been the minhag, says Rav Moshe. Moshe says clearly all the Dari Doris before him have always worked off the assumption that not eating after the afikomen means you're done for the night, and that it doesn't expire any time before the morning. Now, clearly it has to have some limit, it's not infinite. So we generally assume that it's just that night, but that is the way we understand it, that it is for the night. So it's a tremendous chiddush to say that it would end at chatzos. That was the thrust of Rav Moshe's objection. And he also has the whole, especially now that you've read the tshuva inside, so you see Rav Moshe's objection. He says, sounds like he only comes on to this because of the vort about the al achilas matzah. And the nusach of the bracha pushed him to have this whole understanding that there's this point that chatzos, where the mitzvah is going to be done already, and they were only interested in that, and that therefore, as he says, the way Rav Moshe understands, like kind of an afterthought, okay, once I have this mahalach, then it also seems like the isser to eat after the afikomen will stop at chatzos, and that the clock will restart. But Rav Moshe doesn't think that that's the minhag, and he thinks it's not even being proved in a l'chatchila way, it's only coming as a detail of this whole bracha avort, and he doesn't like that so much. There are many others who did. There are many others who did accept this point. And in addition, one of them is the Briska Rav. The Briska Rav is quoted in the Haggadah Mibeis Levi, which has much Torah from Beis Brisk. And Briska Rav says, I believe it's essentially what Ari was saying yesterday, right, that the whole format that the Avnei Nezer has of Ida Kazayas before Chatzos, and that might be the Afikomen, and then eat another Kazayas at the end, and that might be the Afikomen. So that, he says, is working through this whole notion of Tanai B'mitzvos, and that requires first the whole understanding of how you relate to Kavana B'mitzvos, and Kavana Hafachis, the negative Kavana, and then conditional Kavana. It's all a very complicated story, as we've seen this past few days. So as I already said yesterday, I assume this is what you're getting at, that is the way Briska Rav says it also, that you could do the whole thing without the Tanai. Just have a Kazayas at both points. And it stands on its own. You don't need any fancy thought process, but, and there's an extensive discussion about what a Tanai would mean here, like we talked about yesterday, that it have to be verbal, it have to have all the rules of Tanai, which Poskim assume it does not, but it's a whole discussion. So why don't you just skip the whole Tanai thing and just have a Kazayas Matzah then, and have a Kazayas Matzah at the end also, and it'll be that whatever is correct, it was satisfied. And your intent doesn't really matter. So that's a suggestion that you have as well, which gets around a number of issues, because you don't need to accept the whole notion of a Tanai in order to have that. It's also a question, how much does Kavana play a role klal for the Afikomen? So there are conflicting sources about this, and conflicting Mishnah Berurahs about this. But there's a strong possibility Afikomen doesn't require any kind of Kavana at all, which could tie to the question that we started with, is the Afikomen a mitzvah or not? Is it just a zecher, or is it a mitzvah? But even if you say it's the mitzvah of matzah, so there might still be space to distinguish, because yes, it might need kavana to be the mitzvah of matzah, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it has kavana to designate it as this afikomen final status. So that's also a question. You know, and some raise the objection to the Briska Rav that, well, if you don't have the tanai, so then if that first one really was the afikomen, so isn't that a concern that you're eating after the afikomen without any kind of justification? So some respond to that and say, no, it all just becomes clarified, the mafreya, and that if you end up eating, if we say that the clock not restarting, so then whatever you eat afterwards is a continuation of the meal, and the kezayis that you have at the end, that becomes the afikomen mevela. So then it's now clarified that that was the afikomen, and you didn't do anything wrong by eating after the afikomen. Hi.
Mm-hmm. Aren't we still saying that the eating of the afikomen that is for the mitzvah is the one by chatzot, which is the shear of the mitzvah, mm-hmm. right? So then the afikomen at the end, the last eating of matzah, that's there's no mitzvah for that at all. It's just the eating of having it like remaining in your mouth. So why would you need like a tanaik or kavana if there's no mitzvah for that latter eating?
Yeah, it's an interesting question in general how to relate to that, mm-hmm. and it's interesting also that Rav Asher Weissman's Haggadah, a different piece than I was referring to before, which was from Sefer HaMesachim. So he raises this question that the whole assumption that the Avnei Nezer has that you are done with the Isser of eating afterwards once you have once Chatzos passes, he says, doesn't sound like from the Rambam, that the Rambam is saying that you should end on a mitzvah. So that seems to be the issue. So that should seem to extend the problem of eating afterwards. So it could be, especially if you take the two essays of Rav Asher Weiss together, the one we started with from the Sefer HaMesachim at this point, maybe it's not such a problem that the afikomen, as far as its status as a Zeichel HaPesach, the like, so that has to happen in Chatzos. But also the idea of ending on a mitzvah, it doesn't have to be the mitzvah of the afikomen. It could be part of this idea of the extension of matzah. So all the different bites of matzah that you have, that could also address this goal of ending on a mitzvah, even if it's not the mitzvah. And that may also come to emphasize, especially also again to go back to day one, right, that we see that what we talked about in the opening shir on Avei Pesachim, that first of all we saw the Rambam's view was that not eating matzah on Erev Pesach was to have a hecker for the mitzvah of matzah. And also we saw that there were many notions, the Teyavon and the like, that are there to emphasize the Chavivus HaMitzvos generally, Pesach night. So it could be that that's really the issue here also, that we want to close, at least within the Rambam especially, you want to close with a mitzvah. You want to close with the theme of matzah. We know psychologically, say if I ask you to remember a list of things, everyone has a stronger memory for the first and last item on the list. Whatever you start with, whatever you close with, has the biggest impact. So presumably all these dinim work together. That we want to have a big emphasis, teyavon and the like, for the first kedayis of matzah. And we also want to end on that note. And we want that to be the last memory of the Seder night. So presumably they all go together and serve that goal. And to that extent, you know, one could also say that we don't need all the fancy tanayim and kavanas that we have to figure out how they work. It's just a mindset, that your mindset should be that the meal finished with a mitzvah. And therefore, it's also perhaps not going to be as bound by some of these technicalities. And should also add, just it's an interesting discussion that many point out, the Mishnah Berurah seems to have some conflicting statements about this. But just as a point to note, that this brings up the whole question whether there's an issue with having two afikomens in general. That it sounds like, at least in one place in the Mishnah Berurah, that you shouldn't have two afikomens. Because he talks about that if you assume you do need haseva for the afikomen, so what happens if you eat the afikomen without haseva? Should you go do it again? So there the Mishnah Berurah says don't, because it's not a good idea to have two afikomen. So instead of worrying about haseva, he says you can rely on the view of the Rishonim that you don't need haseva for the afikomen. Or, like we discussed, like the Rav Yah, that maybe Bisman is there, we don't really have haseva in that sense. So it's not worth doing it again. But elsewhere he says that if somebody forgot and ate after the afikomen, So then he should have another afikoman in order to address that. So how exactly that shim is as far as this idea of not having two afikomans, it's an interesting question. But it's also something which maybe goes with this idea that ultimately we just want to end on the mitzvah and have a closing memory of an afikoman to bracket off the night. Should also just mention as a closing thought for that Rav Asher in his discussion in Agada, so he also notes that there were many Gedolim who were not so machbid on this idea of Chatzos. It's just a Zahiris Balma, or a Zahiris that's not necessarily the highest priority. It's also interesting, he has notes there as well, that the assumption, the Rush writes in Psachim, that the idea of Reb Elazar ben Azariah that stops at Chatzos, according to the Rush, that's really a Gzeira Midrabanan. That really it could be all night, but we were afraid you could eat the Korban Pesach all night. But just like you have the first Mishnah in Shas, the first Mishnah in Brachos, that the opinion of Chachamim is that Kriyat Shema could be all night, but they made a Gzeira only till Chatzos, so that you shouldn't forget to say Kriyat Shema. So the Rush says that's also what's going on with Korban Pesach. That really, he agrees with Rabbi Akiva that it could be all night, but he said Chatzos in order to keep you away from the possibility of missing it. Now there's interesting discussions to be had about that Rush and to what extent it's consistent with the Rush in the beginning of Brachos. The Beis Halevi has a long truth about it. But that also seems to change the whole setup here. If we assume that really the whole night is the Zman, it's just that the Rabbanan, there's the Kpeit that they have it before Chatzos, it's interesting to question how that affects things. But maybe that also addresses, so what if somebody is in the middle of the Seder? It's not that he's just saying, well, I'll get to my Seder later. And so we're saying that, okay, you should realize that you may forget about it, so make sure to do everything before Chatzos. But he's been doing the Seder the whole time, and it's just schlepping on. So he knows there are some who say that that's this kind of situation where it's all in the spirit of the Gezerah. And like we talked about the Gemara in the first part, it says that Chazal were not worried that having you do Bedikas Chametz on Pesach itself will cause you to eat the Chametz that you find, because if the whole goal is to get rid of the Chametz you're looking for, it's not going to be a Mechshol. So here too, if you're involved in the Seder the whole time, so to say you have to stop the Seder in order to get to the Korban Pesach before Chatzos, maybe that's not such a priority. So we know it's there in light of what we said in the first minute today also, that being that Simchas Yontif and the message of the Seder could be very compromised by an overemphasis on Chatzos, there's not all the Gedolim were so marked on this. And this idea that there has to be an absolute deadline in Chatzos, not everyone considered that to be the highest priority, and it didn't necessarily feel a need for this whole Chachma in order to deal with this. That's just as far as some of the attitudes of life, to mention that. Okay, so let's just recap what we spoke about. So we talked about the Avinezer's Tanai, and that requires a little bit of understanding of what Afikoman is. We saw that as Machlokas Rishonim, what the mitzvah of matzah is. Maybe Afikoman is the mitzvah of matzah, that's what it sounds like from the Rashbam and Rashi, that's where you actually fulfill the mitzvah. While Tosfos and others sound like it's the opening, because I is at the beginning. And there is some tension in the Rashbam and others, because on day one we saw the Rashbam that you don't eat on Erev Pesach in order to preserve an appetite for the matzah l'teovo, and that's the opening kezayis, so which one is the mitzvah? And also the Rambam says you have Heseba for the first matzah, but says that you don't eat after the end because you want to leave a mitzvah taste in your mouth. So we discussed the possibility that it's all true, that even the Iker Mitzvah could be one or the other, but there's still a mitzvah status to the other one. And that's not necessarily a contradiction. And we talked about mitzvahs having a b'di'evit form, but still having a status of a mitzvah that extends either before or after it. And we discussed a little bit that example from reading Megillah. And that's all possible here as well. And then we talked about some other angles as to what the issue is of not eating after the Afikoman. The Baal HaMor quotes one approach that it's so that we eat al hasova, so we should know that there's not going to be any food after, we should have it all before. And we got into a little bit about the Sefer HaChinuch and that, and the general mitzvah observation. And then we talked also about the issue that the Rabbah more disagrees with this, because if the Gemara talks about strong flavors and weak flavors, it doesn't sound like it's just to make sure you eat beforehand. Like, we actually want it to persist. So he says it's there to remind us to say halal. That's also why you shouldn't drink extra between the third and the fourth course. That we want to make sure that the taste is still with us, so that we'll remember to finish up. And if so, then it might be that there's no concern after halal is over. So this whole issue of defining when it ends. So the Aviv Nezer had his Tanai, and that requires a whole premise based on Kavanah and Mitzvos, and negative Kavanah and Tanai. And the Brisker Rav had the same idea without the Tanai, just that have Matzah at both points. And that will be effective. Reb Moshe questioned the whole assumption that there is this expiration to the Yisr at Chatzos. He questioned the whole process that led to it, and this is against the Midig. And especially in light of the Rambam is also what to ask. We talked about different ways to look at that. And we noted that it's also possible here that this is just about framing the night with this whole value that we saw at the beginning of emphasizing mitzvos and chavivus on mitzvos, and making sure that that message is what you're left with, and what you start with and what you leave with. And talked also about the question of whether you can have two afikomens or not, and the steers in the Mishnah Berurah, and different depressions in the Mishnah Berurah, and a strong possibility that it's not really about Kavanah's mitzvah in the technical sense, but it's just about how you relate to this whole night, that you should be leaving it with a sense of matzah and beginning it with a chavivus of matzah. And we also just noted that Rashi Weissman Zagad has a little bit of a discussion about just how much we should stand on our head to do this in the first place. That it could be that we're not so mocked on the idea of Chatzos either, if it's going to create a great conflict as far as the meaningfulness of the Seder and as far as Simchas Yontif is concerned. And also they mentioned the Svara that maybe it's only a Harchaka D'Rabbanan to have finished by Chatzos, and the Rush indicates, and that if that's the case, so that maybe if you're actually involved in the Seder the whole time, it doesn't seem so likely that you're going to forget to have the Korban Pesach, and therefore we don't necessarily have to have that paid. Of course, it's probably also emphasized the fact that we're not actually having the Korban Pesach anyway. That it's one thing when you actually have the Korban Pesach, so then to make a concern, to make a policy to protect you from forgetting it, takes on much more weight than a zecher to that policy of not even having the Korban Pesach again. Okay, so we will stop there. Tomorrow we have two parshiyos to talk about, and we have a lot ahead of us over the next 2 weeks, so we will look forward to accomplishing a lot in that time. But now we have mincha, so anyone want to volunteer? Do we have want to open up? Sam, we're down for it? Sorry?